Okay. Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock, and this is the class in which we are studying, working our way through the book called The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. it's a profitable study. It's fruitful. It's filled with marvelous treasures as we go along. We've been working very hard over the last several months to sow the seeds of our interest. And by that, because of diving into it, as I said last week, one of the things that's occurring here is that we have an individual who's written a book that's quite remarkable. A lot of this literature is quite remarkable. It's our job to do something with it, okay? It's our job to mine it. Now, the individuals in this class, and I'm not sure who's all on, but whoever's on, these are individuals that have taken the time over the last many years to begin to hone their spiritual path. And we're many, many, many techniques in which we're doing that. So what we're doing is, how then do I apply this material to my everyday life as a spiritual aspirant? All right? Now, because we hear things out there, we hear the things, you know, like open your something like watch yourself or pay attention to yourself. What do these things actually mean, and how do you actually do it? Well, we're far enough along in the path as individuals. We're intermediate seekers where we can actually begin. Mm-hmm. We can ask beginner-level questions because we're not afraid anymore. And the necessity of our work has put us in such a place that we need to know these answers now. Okay? It's like, oh, wake up the machine. Oh, yeah, it sounds good. Well, 10 years later, you finally ask yourself, well, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. And because no longer is it a matter of embarrassment or a matter of whatever, or not even a matter of good feelings or good vibes. But it gets propelled to have a specificity on how do we do our work. Because once you can begin to answer questions like that, you can begin to answer, you can begin to set what I'm going to call waking state traps for yourself. Okay? Nice, huh? Nice. And the reason is that we are awash in a world of sleep. And that's just the way it is. I mean, that there's no judgment really about it, but we have to be somewhat aware of that as we're going through our lives. And we have to be aware of the fact that we're awash in sleep as well. So anyway, we're in a very unique position. We're in chapter 13 of this book called The Hidden Work. And Ivan, read the header of that chapter, if you would, please. This will just orient you as to where we're at. And then we're gonna. This is our 10th week at this.
10th, is it?
Or is it 9? I can't remember. 10th.
Thought for food. As we take food up into our personal cosmos, it awakens to our own extent of consciousness. What we eat becomes part of us and partakes of our own degree of consciousness.
So we've had a vibrant series of conversations over the last several weeks about the human process of eating food, the actual process of buying food, preparing food, consuming food, the process of the invocational dinner, the idea, and these are all in the past talks that we've explored. Like, for instance, the real live for me, the very live concept of transubstantiation, where if we are blessed with the food and the food is subject to this vibratory sensation that we bring to it, that the food itself is actually becomes something different, becomes a different thing, and that's transubstantiation. 3 weeks ago, then, I was challenged by Silverdale, and he says, hey, come on, now when are you going to start talking about the other kind of food? the other level of food. Well, what do you mean by that? And he says, well, food, we're talking about the physical food, the meat and vegetables, potatoes and whatnot, drinks that we have, and how our approach to it, we can come to those with a waking state, and in the waking state, we actually are more nourished by it. And then there's a wonderful concept in there about that it actually gives the food a chance to go to another level, as it says, to go to heaven. And you'll read that if you read the chapter. But if there's hinting throughout this that that's really just an allegory. All of this is an allegory for a higher kind of food as well.
David, that would be a good continuation of that header if you were to add something like, so what we feed to higher dimensions is also subject to the consciousness of that higher level.
That,
it is transformed.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been sitting here worrying about how we're going to do chapter 14 and 15, and it's on that exact topic, Harry, is that, and when Dante is at the end of Purgatorio, and Virgil has taken him through the Inferno, through all of the levels, seven levels of the mountain. At that point, Virgil leaves and Beatrice comes to take him to the next level. And when he hits the next level, Paradiso or heaven,
yep,
the entities there say, you can't even see us. We're too advanced. We're too big. We're too expansive. But for your sake, and this is in the Divine Comedy only, of course, we'll diminish ourselves so that we are able to speak with you and you can learn of these higher regions. So how can we serve that higher? Well, we've talked about the idea of becoming a proper host and the idea of hosting the higher energetics. That's it's a difficult thing to be able to do, but we can just get there if we can get there in ourselves as well. And so I'm going to review where we were last week, and this is a participatory class, okay? This is the individuals who are on the phone, and there's, I don't know if Simon's on or not, but, you know, several individuals who are working very hard to try to discover what else is here and how we can make it a practicum. Every book I read now is a practicum. Maybe it's important to understand the theory and the matrix upon which we talk about, but every time I finish a paragraph, I want to go, how do I apply that to my life? And am I able to express it in some way to my fellow workers so that together we can come up with some practical tools, all right? That's what it is. So where did we finish last week? So last week what we were talking about is this idea that is there a different form of food? And we talked about that the essential cell, we are now in a position where we can get ourselves to a place of presence, the beginning levels of presence, where we're there and we have a presence of self. Because of that, we're able to turn around every once in a while and look at the machine and look at the machine and see its machine manifestations and begin to scratch the surface of that. All right? And so the question being posed here to me and for us is as follows. How is it possible for me to look at the manifestations of the human biological machine, my biological machine, and consume those manifestations as food for the higher self? Is that possible to do? What's the nature of that? And if it is, how can I do that? And I'm just not asking this in a theoretical way, because half the people online right now basically work in a somewhat solo environment. They're not working every night with a group of people. They don't come together on Thursdays and with 12 people and study. a lot of people work on their own. So is it possible to bring this material to such a level that we can say, okay, how can I uncover something in myself to make it food for the higher?
Do you think it really can be done alone?
Your phone is very loud.
Very loud?
Yeah, different than usual.
I can barely hear. I'm using a different phone this evening.
Ah, okay.
Good. Is it okay?
You should get a quieter phone, if you can.
If you can
you
get
are,
a...
You are loud tonight.
I have to turn it down when you speak.
Yeah, I don't have another option.
Okay, that's all right. We'll work with what we got then. I'm going to need some help from somebody on the log if there's something to be said. And I'll
keep an eye on it, David.
Okay, thank you, Harry. Okay. So how do we begin this process? Now, part of the reason that I'm bringing this up is the following. Over the last several months, actually, I've had the opportunity to work directly with Susan on some of the things, the processes that she's going through. And one of the events that occurred about 3 or 4 weeks ago was she'd come back from a procedure in the hospital, and they put her into rehab. And she was in rehab for, you were there about a week, right?
Yeah, about a week.
She was there for about a week, and then she came home. She came home on a Friday, and then so she came to her home where she and her husband lived. And then her brother was going to visit her and her sister. So suddenly the family's all together again, right? Mm-hmm. That sounds very nice. Family gets together, nice little,
reunion.
Reunion of family members. And that's, let's just put it this way, that's when the fireworks started, okay?
And that's when all the buttons were pushed.
Beep. Now, so we can look at it several ways. We can look at it as that's a reaction of the machine and you need to just stop that. Stop it. That's the, Bob Newhart, I think, his technique of psychology is just stop it. Just stop it. Or, you know, we've all come up with remarkable methods of suppression where we just, if we get close to a topic, we just find a way, we're not going to go there. You know, I'm not going to go into that area because I might be embarrassed, humiliated, feel pain, whatnot. So, anyway, in the course of working with your sisters there, there was this little event. I mean, for us, it's just a nothing event. Mm-hmm. And believe me, they're all nothing events. And that's what's so incredible about it and so fruitful. And if I recall, and Susan, let me know if you can expand on this a bit, but what happened is she's sitting there just out of rehab, not even that ambulatory yet, and her sister's doing something, and she's over there near a lamp, and Susan says to the sister, can you flick on the light? And what did your sister say?
She said, God, you're demanding.
Which we all agree that is highly demanding,
yeah.
And pushing the limits of human courage.
But this... of course, was after days of doing lots of things for me. So, I mean, yes, she did work quite hard at
healing. That's not the point. The point has nothing to do with the sister. The point has nothing to do with the history up to then. That all of it has to do with Susan.
And my reaction to that button being pushed.
And so when at first she was talking to me about it, she was going on and on about her sister and all of her sister's deficiencies, and there are many. I mean, we were on page 12 or 13 of volume 1 when I said, hold it. Because we actually don't know what was going on her sister at that moment, right? She could have had a rock in her shoe. Mm-hmm. She could have been had nausea from the meal earlier in the day. Her arm could have hurt. We have no idea.
Right. It could have been a joke.
Could have even been a joke. But in the reaction that arose from Susan, at that moment, the question then is, what can we know something about? We can't actually objectively know anything about the sister because, first of all, the sister's not here. So what can we know about in a situation like this?
Only ourselves.
All we can investigate is Susan might be able to say something about what's going on in her, right? And so we begin pulling threads. We begin pulling on this thread of, well, what was going on?
Why did I react? Why did I... Like, what came up in me? Like, I keep saying, what button got pushed? And once she did a thing that reminded me of all of the childhood, I was gone on a script back to, you know, when I was a kid. And then I was coming from that, it's kind of embarrassing because all of a sudden you are 7 years old.
It is embarrassing. It's humiliating. It's humiliating to whom?
Well, to the part of me that was trying to hold on to that reality, to a reality.
And the part of you that had an image about how you wanted other people to view you.
Right.
Like, it's just not spiritual to have a reaction like that. I don't want everybody to see that I've got that going on, because we look at the thing and we say, oh, it's pretty immature, it's pretty low level.
Right, we're supposed to let the negative manifestations of others flow over us and not affect us.
But in this case, it did. So
right. Rather
than looking at it from just the point of view of the historical personality and the ego, which is the ruler of that kingdom, what if it's looked at as an opportunity to look at this, as Silverdale has said, as the manifestations of the historical personality, or the human biological machine? That was a manifestation that came up. So, how do we go about what does it mean to look at such a thing? And how do we actually recognize it? And then can there be something called consuming this as food for the higher? And I think we're going to get into some very interesting things in a minute, because if that occurs, something else happens. All right? So, does anybody, I'm just wondering what, if there's comments or if
there's not any on the log, David.
Yeah.
I would like to add something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think that is kind of the crux of what we're talking about is first actually identifying with reality to actually drop your preconceptions and look at what is reality. And then a substance that can be consumed, I think, is what needs to be explored. What is created by facing that reality?
Okay.
Like, because for me, I had a space created, like an openness that something could now flow into.
This at the time that this happened?
At the time of realizing my preconceptions of who I thought she was were not reality, and it was simply something I made up, is when I faced... That's when I faced the reality of it.
Yeah. When it occurred, it was just a reaction. So the next
step,
that she just was just a reaction. She got pissed off. She had all these comments about her sister, anger, and extreme justification. She was very justified in her position there.
Okay.
And however, something occurred later that's important. And Mark has a comment?
He has three comments, David.
Go ahead.
He just posted these. An alternative is the invocation of presence mantram to put one into a more aware, attentive state and so be better able to choose our next step or response.
Okay.
And then he goes on to say, as a way of utilizing the energy of whatever unpleasantness we may have noticed, so as to then be more aware and hence able to find one's right place in the current octave.
Okay. That's a possibility. And that's clearly where, in a certain way, we'd like to wind up. And that's like kind of winding up. You get hit by this, and you wind up like a cat on your feet. Right? You get thrown for a loop, and yet because of your work, you can wind up on your own feet. And you wonder, but the key is you wonder about yourself at that point, too. The mechanicality of the machine is there. In time, Susan felt compelled to wonder about this thing that went on in her, and she called.
Oh, okay.
That's the next step that happened. She had to talk about it. What the hell happened here? Okay, that was the beginning of what I call the beginning of confession. The process of confession started at that. Susan was compelled to get into it. So the weight of the humiliation was less than her interest in what was going on in me. Okay?
Right, and all I had to really work on was me. I couldn't do anything to change her.
Well, most of the time, that is what we do, is we want to change the external. And so what I'm trying to pose here is let's change this from an external point of view, where we try to change the people around us, to an internal, where we can, what's going on internally, and maybe get to the point where Mark is talking about, of that sense of presence, that we're, in a sense, maybe blown into that sense of presence as a way of response to the energetic that's occurring. So Susan called. She had to find out what this was. What's going on? So there's a recognition of it that you can find stuff that you respond to during the day. And I guarantee you this stuff is happening in one form or another all day long. So she was able to see it, and then she decided she had to start to do something about it. So she began this process that I'm calling the process of confession. Is that something, as I speak these words out, I mean, these are things that have come out over the last, you know, few weeks and things like that, or with working with some people. My question is does this ring a bell for anybody? Are we on track at all here? Is this something we should be pursuing? On track, okay.
Yeah, we're clearly talking about those negative manifestations of the machine, of the historical personality, an example of it for
yeah.
Susan. Now, I wanted to clarify something, which is what you're saying is it's not, there isn't any chance that in real time, at the time she's in the room with her sister experiencing this, at that time she was not using that manifestation to feed something higher.
I guarantee you, next time she's with her sister,
right,
that she will be able to do that in real time.
You just jumped ahead, yeah.
I've jumped way ahead, but it's because she did the work now
mm-hmm.
that what we're talking about is that the manifestation may not change.
Right.
Okay,
exactly.
I have a dear friend that when I take her to a restaurant, she always, when she orders from the menu, she always says, may I have this or that? She never says, I would like to have a hot dog or whatever the hell, or a waffle. And she, but that's a string attached to some heavy loads, which yet she's not quite ready to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that it's going to happen again. I guarantee you next time it's going to turn up. And the same thing with Susan is that it's going to turn up again with her when her comes. The thing may manifest again.
Right.
Her relationship to it will be different. So at that point, you're saying you want there to be some response like that because then you get a chance to look at it even more carefully. Because at this point, because of the work on self and this specific revelatory event mm-hmm. and the next level of work that she did, Susan can then put herself back in that situation. She probably
pick a fight.
It's a fight?
I said, and I can pick a fight.
You can pick a fight?
Yeah, just in the name of the work.
Yeah. Yeah. But the fight is not with your sister, is it?
No, it's not.
The fight is internal. And so back to what Mark was saying, and Mark may have done this kind of work too, I've had situations where I think I mentioned this a few months ago, or maybe it was a year or two ago, I don't remember anymore, but I went into this guy's house, I was a client, a potential client, and I go into this person's house, and it was a very elegant home. It was the guy was a particular kind of builder, so it was really quite beautiful. It was really well appointed. It was in this the woods, and he goes on and on about how he did this and he did this. So I was reacting when I'm in there, and I had it was a form of jealousy, kind of various what I call my money problems came up, right? And I kind of smiled inwardly, and I thought, that's interesting. But the thing was operating, right? It wasn't a raging fire. Maybe the intensity of that mechanicality was less. I mean, there was less energy on it. But that doesn't mean that it stopped. But I've watched it and had an inward smile about it.
David, there are some more postings here. I'd like to.
Go ahead.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Jim H. says, it has to start with awareness, then desire to examine what you are aware of.
Okay, so these we need to write these down. So that's step one. Susan became aware of it because she had the absolute opportunity because her sister was there, and Susan at some point we're going to see, and I have this from one other person too. We'll get into this at another point, but the gift was like your sister paid a price for saying that to you in the way she did too. She paid a certain price. So that's the first thing. So there's the self-awareness. And what's the second thing that Jim H. said?
Well, I was just actually looking at what Mark then subsequently posted. Confessing seems to serve as a way of looking at whatever we have been holding from different perspectives, which let us be more aware of and objective about it.
Okay, that's like the, we're going to get to that in a mark in a minute, Mark, but that's precisely where it's headed. But Jim H. said that that was, there's recognizing it, and then there's...
Well, being, I'll start with awareness and then desire to examine it.
Okay, so the desire to examine it is an important point. The only reason we will have a desire to examine it is if the essential self has become strong enough where it has enough presence where we can look at this thing and we want to examine it. Okay? And then the concept of examining it begins the process, Jim, of what's called, I call a confession. So you had a comment also, Harry, earlier, which says to confess is to offer up as food.
Yes, yes, I do.
Okay. Now, here's the mechanics of this. And you know, the mechanics of it is that when we begin, we are so identified with this stuff, we can't tell ourselves apart from it. Mm-hmm. And we can't, even to the extent where we can't observe it, because how can you observe it? That is me. I am that. There's no difference between me and it, right? It's just me. So there's that. Then gradually something allows you where you can begin to observe it. As you begin to observe it, it starts to have the very, very first elements of what I call, I am not that.
Yes.
What is that chapter in Practical Work and Self? Does anybody remember?
Chapter 7.
But chapter 7, I am not that. So that's the beginnings of it. So guess what? So we're like this. We're medded to it. We're mm-hmm. alloyed to these manifestations. Right. There's no difference between it and me. And gradually, through the maybe this, these are the right words, but through the alchemical process of this observation, gradually there's a slight break. And in the slight break then, we can bring the force, the powerful force called the attention of the sacred self. When we begin the attention of the sacred self on these things, then it becomes something other than I. That doesn't mean it changes. There's a mechanical matrix to it. Maybe over time, in fact, over time it does change, over a long time.
David Mark said pretty much the same thing here. He said that being aware and observing this also makes us somewhat more distant from whatever we have to confess.
Yeah, it makes it more, it literally becomes, you begin to realize that you are observing the mechanicality of the machine, and then, you know, this whole concept of I am not that, and there's something quite beautiful about that. It's just a marvelous, that's the beginning of birth, in my opinion. It's, we are made anew. I don't know what, I mean, I've been a Christian and I was born again, okay? I was born again as a Christian and I was born again for about 3 months. I was saved. I was born again, I was saved, and now I'm no longer, I don't know if I'm saved anymore, but all I know is that even though I might not be saved or born again, I know that at this point I'm beginning to create true freedom and enter into that true angelic space. Okay. So Susan took the exact formula that Jim is talking about. Now I want to point out something here. This is not theoretical for her. This is an actual specific mechanism that worked in her. And she picked it up, she grabbed it, this hot metal piece of iron, and picked it up in her hands. In Rinzai Zen, the master will give you a koan. They'll give you a koan that's very specific to you. This is her koan. And it'll burn in her belly like a hot metal iron ball. And eventually, she'll tussle with it. She'll battle it. But every second of the way, there's going to be this, she's realizing slightly, I am not that. I am not that. Every so slightly.
Mm-hmm. David, there's something from Jim.
Please, yeah, go ahead.
Being radically honest provides an opportunity to confront and transcend ego.
Well, I hope you know where I'm going with this.
About being radically honest?
Well, so the task here, we understand that what Jim said is correct, but the task here is how do you bring, I don't know, there's like 5 or 10 people online, I think. Or how many people are on there?
15.
15?
Yep.
So there's 15 people online. The question is there a way to make this, is this a practicum for you? When you're looking at this, when we're talking about this, and Susan, on the altar of sacrifice, she has come through, and God said, kill me a son. Where do you, and Abraham says, where do you want this killing done? And Susan says, I'll do it. I'll sacrifice my own son on the altar. And it's the only in the preparation and the intent of that sacrifice that the freedom begins to occur. She's doing that now for the rest of us. And so every single person there, all of us, have a moment of these manifestations coming through, and we can grab that thread and pull on it.
David, it is one thing to say that it is good to sacrifice, and it is quite another to actually offer up something of your own to sacrifice.
There you go, Harry, and that's what I'm talking about is, are we getting to a point, are we to a point in our work today where we can in a sense, say and sacrifice something, each of us. I'm not asking you necessarily, I'm not saying go ahead and put it in the log, but, I mean, I know Mark lives alone, for instance, down there. This guy is a, he's an experienced player. He's been pushing hard in this form of work for a long time. But what can he do as an individual? Can he bring forth something that he can bring? And just for himself, it doesn't have to be a path world sitting down there in the labyrinth of Riverside. So that's the point, that we have enough mileage now that we're able to grab some of these things like Susan did, and then we are able to actually do something with it. And in, we're not quite ready yet to finish this, but I want to bring in the next part of the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan, you still there?
Yes.
Okay. Now, needless to say, this is all related to a bunch of stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, we don't need to get into what the stuff necessarily was, but let's just say it had to do with personal recognition. It had to do with things like being neglected, right? So, if I have this powerful thing, and she says to me, this remarkable thing, she says, if I have this then, if I have this matrix of neglect, let's say, if that's sitting in me, how then can I express my own love? Because every time this will come up, like, that it's meted to it. It's like this. Because I am not free, I'm not able to express a certain form of freedom, the freedom that I am meant to bring forth on this planet. So, where I'm going with that is that for her in particular, and for all of us in particular, it's for her particular signature has something to do with being able to have an expression to express her love in a very, very particular manner. And she put herself in a position with this family that's terribly confused about all of this. And yet in that and within it, Susan, this is what I was thinking about last night, is that within all of this are the keys to that very freedom. That was brought to you as well.
Well, and it really lies in the honesty. It relies in the radical honesty of being able to look at such a seemingly silly event and really digging. I mean, and I can't tell you how much having the help of talking to you and being able to confess to you helped me to be able to dig beyond this little thing,
right,
and weave my way back. And then actually face what's really there, not what's pretendly there.
Right.
Not what I thought was there or what I want to be there. Just looking at what is there. And it's hard.
It's hard to do that. Part of the reason it's hard is because we've spent many years, decades, decades. We're into the decades part. We spent decades protecting these areas, protecting them so that we're safe. Because that's mostly what we want to do, is remain safe, right?
Survival.
Yeah.
We just want to remain safe. I want to just be safe, okay? Mm-hmm. Safe is a good thing. Is it safe? Is it safe? Well, guess what? It isn't. But we mainly want to remain safe, so we spent decades finding ways around those areas of sensitivity so that we don't have to face what Susan's talking about, the reality of it, this radical honesty, as Jim H. is saying as well. Since we don't face it because we don't know what to do. We don't know how to deal with it. There's been no schools about this. Well, now there is. That's what we're talking about. This is the way to deal with it. Because we have an essential self that is starting to ever so gradually grow, so you can look at that and say, I am not that. I'm something else. We're buffered from it. We're heavily buffered from it.
Now, I have a question. Where is that? I understand that there is a moment in self-observation where Susan felt embarrassed or uncomfortable about her reaction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that in thinking back on it? This is in a later time.
This was at a later time, looking at how much of a reaction I had to such a little thing, and how could I still have that same charge that I had since childhood. I thought I had done a lot of work, and something this small will get me. So that's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering if that's a transitional moment, you know, the feeling that you're uncomfortable with having had this reaction, you know, having had this behavior. So you're starting to look at it. I guess
Yes. You
can only become uncomfortable, embarrassed because you're observing yourself, you're reconstructing your own behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Jim says this is akin to dropping the facial mask.
Dropping the facial mask is a way of being able to observe it in a very objective manner. We're looking for ways of objectivity here, and that's something that's a way of doing it, Jim. It happens to be one that I use a lot.
Yeah, dropping the facial mask is a good idea. See, I'm just wondering if that, now let's say you start to observe yourself, you've had this bad experience, you know, this negative interaction, and now you're starting to look at it. So you have other emotions that are arising as a reaction to looking at it or recalling your behavior. So are these also in succession not more the machine emotions or negative emotions?
Sure, absolutely they are. Yeah, that's the collateral damage, in a sense.
It's like those rings in the pond. In practical work on self.
That's chapter 2.
The
pond exercise.
Yes.
Yeah, in other words, she had a reaction, and then she had a reaction about having a reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, though that's ancillary to it. That's secondary. It's the core reaction that is, in a sense, virginal, that we should grab and study.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that if this is a process of going towards the essence point of view, you know, going towards the
good point.
A very clarified, let's say, or detached point of view that you're wanting to arrive at, where you're, I guess what I'm looking for is at what point in this process is there a reversal of the pump, let's say, and to use another analogy, where is, you know, does a feeding, you know, where is a feeding possible? You know,
almost instantaneous.
Well, I always thought George might have a comment on this.
I must have completely blanked out there.
David was saying about the having the experience again, having it happen again, and then being in a different place with it, or having a different process go on. That seems to me to be where the essence can be gaining from this.
Or where the pump is reversed, George.
Yeah. See, there's still energy there. There's energy on this thing. It's, a lot of it has to do with the concept of how attached to the energy, how identified with it are we. Mm-hmm. And one of the phrases that we came up in during this study was this phrase that after the act of seeing yourself in this, which I think an integral part of it is a form of confession. I don't think theoretically you can observe it.
Right.
The act of seeing yourself in it is a way in which you break the hypnotic trance that the essential self has with the machine. Do you remember that, Harry?
I do. Seeing your part in the drama, your role in this drama, shocks you out of the state of hypnosis.
We are basically in hypnosis of the mechanicality of the HBM. We are hypnotized by it. It's the relative power of the two force spaces are enormously different. So we're hypnotized by it. That's all we can see. I am that. I am that machine. And you just move around. There's no difference. You can't move away from it. And then an event happens, and you see, I am not that.
David, there's some other comments here, if you would like me to
read.
Yeah, the comments.
Mark Circa adds a different perspective here. He says,
great.
I try to avoid a dramatic talk that my family might try to draw out of me, which might make them upset also.
Well, Mark, I think it's something that you're going to have to work with. Sometimes going into that family situation, there's an enormous, why do we even flow into these families, right? Why do we pick these particular families that we grew up in? We pick them in part because all of us are enmeshed in this karmic dance together. And you, because you're working on self and you're trying to do something better, maybe you're the one that can come to freedom about the particular matrix that you're in, Mark, with the family. If you can come to a point of clarity, maybe you'll help them become free too. Aria's not, I don't think she's on, but she used to talk about this when she went back to see these friends from former colleagues from work, I think is what it was. And it, you know, been like a couple of years since she'd seen them, and suddenly it was all different. Because she was in a different place. So if we can begin working out, when you go to the family and you start to feel the strain of this confusion, can you observe yourself in it? That's the first step. Just take a shot at that first. Don't do anything with it. Don't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just try to swallow it a little bit.
David, Jim H. kind of wraps it up here with a humorous note saying that anybody that says they're enlightened should spend the weekend with their parents and in-laws.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's one of the best places to look, because I have this I just have a straight belief, okay? It's my belief is that we manifested in our particular families because we have a particular karmic matrix that we're in, a particular fabric of karma that we are in, and they are the best way and provide the best opportunity for us to unravel that and create a whole new quilt. But we're the ones that have to do the work. This is where we begin to pay for our work, and you have to, this is the work you do to free yourself enough. And I guarantee you, if you can free yourself in that manner, you're doing a service to that family too, Jim H. and Mark and Susan. We're doing a service to that family as well.
Well, David, that's where we will find what we need to sacrifice.
Yes, sir. And I think, yes. So I think I
sent that we cooked in.
I think I sent an email around. I said, suppose that you are a nomad. All right. Suppose that you are nomadic. What would your life be like? What would be different in it? What would be different if you were not attached to living at such and such an address with all the trimmings on it? But that in your nomadic life, you just go to the next place that you as a voyager need to be. The point of it is this, okay? We are not stuck on the planet. We are voyagers here. We wouldn't even be here in this class if that wasn't the case. We are voyagers collected together to discern what some of the work is that we should do. And if we can do that work, and we can do it together, we've created just these moments of freedom. That's what we can offer. Okay? Anything else, Harry?
Oh, there is a whole spate of good postings here right at the very end, of course. Everyone's kind of gestated for a while.
Go ahead and read. Just read away.
Silverdale says that family members provide the best opportunity for work on self because of our identification.
We get born, and then... You know, like you kind of get identified with your mom, right?
Yep.
And then you get identified with your dad. And if you're a girl type thing, you have certain dynamics there. If you're a boy type thing, you have other dynamics. And
Antimatter says that most of the drama of the Old Testament is based on family interactions, Cain and Abel, Abraham and Isaac, Moses and so forth.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to read the Cain and Abel thing, and it's going to blow your mind when we read it.
Mark said Adam and Eve arguing, Mark wrote, said.
Yeah, and, you know, okay, we're going to do Cain and Abel because you think you know the story, but wait till we dig into it a little bit. Go ahead. Thank you, Antimatter. You're right.
And then Antimatter goes on to say, Joseph and his brothers, I think there is a deep reason for these stories and explorations of typicality.
Yeah, and if you want a good read, just read Job. Anyway, there's just great, great stories there. You know, we did the parable of the talents last week. Was it last week that we did that? Matthew 25, was that it? A
couple of weeks ago.
Winnipeg
says, in one of the talks, someone asked EJ how I can prepare myself for working at the Institute. EJ then stated, have a member of your family nag you up for about 3 weeks.
Nice.
I think he used the word scream.
There you go.
That's food for thought.
Okay. The Mark Twain version of Adam and Eve, Dan tells, reminds us.
Yes.
Well, we're over time, but I think this is obviously a fruitful area. We're going to continue this next week. I don't know how to... I'd like to encourage you to consider something like this that Susan has had, and think about, is it something that you can bring forth? That you can bring forth into a situation where maybe even as a group we can work on it together. I know this is it's like impossible, it's like embarrassing to even bring it up. It's like, you're not supposed to talk about stuff like that, right? I'm bringing it up, okay? I'm the guy that's bringing it up. So let's see what happens. This is a very fruitful area. These are the actual moments of freedom that we're talking about. So I encourage all of you, and if you'd like to share it directly with me, I think most of you get in these emails that I write, so you have my email address, or you can call me, some of you have my number, or nothing, or whatever. It's all good. We'll see if we can dig into it a little bit more next week. So we'll call it.
Part 46 next week.
Pardon?
Part 46 next week.
47.
She says. Thank you, everybody. We'll look forward to next week.
All right. Good night. Thanks, everyone.
All right.